Actually, I've always felt that just having two hats, right? One hat as of an academic and other hat as of a CTO has helped me. Sometimes, like, you know, when having a conversation, sometimes having my academic hat on is more beneficial, because then the person on the other side sees me not as somebody who's come something to sell, right? To be genuinely interested in understanding their problems and solving them. But sometimes the other, like, you know, if I don't have my CTO hat on, if I don't have my product hat on, then people say, why am I talking to this person? Because he can't solve my problem. He's just an academic, right? So being able to have both hats on and translation by understanding what conversation I'm in has helped me.
Hi, wherever you're listening to us, I hope you're doing well. Welcome to the Startup Fridays, weekly conversations with accomplished entrepreneurs and VC investors. I'm Hari Arakli, and in this episode, Shivnath Babu, co-founder and CTO of Unravel Data, talks about the growing importance of data observability and the contributions being made by his venture. Shivnath started his career as a computer science engineer from IIT Madras and then earned his PhD in the area of data platforms at Stanford University. He spent 12 years as an adjunct professor at Duke University before teaming up with Kunal Agarwal to start Unravel Data. The venture today is a Series D funded company with investors including Third Point Ventures, Menlo Ventures, and GGV Capital. Dr. Babu, welcome to this podcast. Thank you so much for making time for this. Looking forward to this.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And really looking forward to the conversation.
So by way of some homework, I tried to learn something about your work. Of course, it's pretty technical. And as we go along, hopefully we'll get you to explain it to us in simple terms. But I am curious about how you went from being a serious computer science academic to full-fledged entrepreneur. So maybe you could give us a quick snapshot of that journey from IIT Madras to starting Unravel Data, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely, yeah. So again, I did my got my undergraduate degree in computer science at IIT Madras, so now Chennai. One turning point of the few turning points I've had in my career, one key turning point was in the third year of my undergraduate degree. Everyone gets to do a internship. So I did an internship at IISc Bangalore, Indian Institute of Science. And I got to do it with Professor Govindarajan, who was in the Supercomputer Research Center. In fact, at that time, IISc had one of the two supercomputers. Now, you don't hear those terms anymore, right? It's high-performance computing. But IISc had one of the two supercomputers in India. The other one was Parab in Bombay. And I got to work on this project where, when it's a supercomputer, it's a lot of machines kind of connected together. But how do application developers create their application on this distributed system? So we came up with a way in which it's very easy to create these applications, like you're writing things on a blackboard. Right? And that project was so interesting that I thought, hey, I want to do innovative work like this going forward, right? But it also gave me that, like, what now can kind of recognize as that first entrepreneur skill, right? Like, can we create something innovative that will benefit a lot of people, that will benefit society, so to speak, right? Like, which now we kind of say a product that can influence and help a lot of people. So at that point, until then, I was kind of thinking of, hey, I'll go do some work right after finishing my degree. I felt I should go do more research, more learning. And when I got finished my undergraduate degree, I got an opportunity to go to one of the top universities in the US. And I decided to pick Stanford. When I had the opportunity to go to other places too. And why Stanford? Because I felt, hey, this is the place where Google had just been created. Literally, I joined the team where the two founders of Google had been working, and they'd just gone a few months back to start Google. Right? So all of those, like in Stanford, it's like, you know, just you walk along the hallways, it's like always, it's like that mix of academia and entrepreneurship. So that bug was there, and one of the things I want to do, and I still want to do, is I want to take one idea all the way from the inception of that idea to a product that can make a difference in the world, in society. And so that's what I'm trying to do, and I did get the opportunity through Unravel, where some of the research that we are doing, we are trying to take it out in the world. So that is a short way of my journey from IIT through ISC through Stanford through now at Unravel.
How is it that you spent a fair amount of time in academia before you turned entrepreneur?
When I did my PhD, when I got the doctor attached to my name, right? So that was building what today is called a data stream management system, streaming data, not the media streaming, but real time, when you have to detect fraud, on credit card transactions, right? That's done as the data is sort of streaming in. That's what I got to work on when I was doing my PhD. In fact, right after that was the first opportunity to form a company. But then when we did what today is kind of called evaluating the market, evaluating the product market fit, I felt that was a little bit too niche. Maybe it didn't have legs, right? Although a lot of companies have been created out of Stanford, in and before and after that, I felt that maybe that's not the idea. So I decided to join as a professor at Duke University, where I could continue researching ideas like this without any fear of failure. So that is every academic is actually an entrepreneur in a form or shape, right? Because you can work without fear of failure, because that is what you're expected to. And the one idea which I had carried from my learnings at Stanford was, how can we use AI and machine learning, apply it to all the data that can be collected from these systems and platforms, and then convert that into insights that will make these systems itself easy to understand. So I kept working on that idea in various forms and shapes, and yes, there was a time, and it was not an overnight just clicking, right? It is actually a lot of hard work, which eventually got to a point where we decided to enter that idea into the Duke startup competition. Right? That was the first brush with a business proposal writing and a business proposal being evaluated. Well, we didn't win, but the idea generated so much interest that we felt that this is the time. And this is the one thing to take it forward.
Which year was this competition that you entered it in?
This was 2012.
Okay, all right. And so I guess from that point, you would have been tinkering with it both on your computer and in the back of your mind until you basically took the plunge to go for it full time.
Indeed. So again, some of these ideas to take it from inception to actually a product can take time. The first thing was was an idea that we had worked on at the university. It was a lot of research ideas, right? And what is a product in it? It was not easy to figure out, right? So first we took that idea, started working with a few companies and understood that, so now it's now called big data and observability, right? But first thing we understood is technology moves so fast that the initial ideas that we had worked on at the university were not quite extensible, or they were not adapting as the technology itself was evolving. So we had to do a round two of building those ideas again. So 2012 became 2013 and 14 and 15. In fact, I took sabbatical leave from Duke University to work on these ideas, all the while not funded, and all those great stories to tell as a not funded startup, right? And eventually we got to a point where the new version of these ideas and the new product we could try out at some of the major companies that are working with data. And this was around the 2016 time, and we also got a couple of customers who were not only using the product and giving feedback but actually paying for the product. And that was the time we felt that my co-founder, Kunal Agarwal, and me, right, we felt this is the time to look for entrepreneurial funding. And one thing led to the other, and that was our Series A. No, that was in 2016. We raised our first round of funding, but the real company was actually formed.
And in 2012, what was sort of that raw idea?
So the idea has always been one thing and one thing only, right? The idea is as very simple state. Everyone wants to build great applications on data. So data is changing the world, right? Data has now become what every company is relying on to revolutionize their own destiny, as well as capture and grow. But building these applications and creating and generating all of these insights on data is not easy. And why it's not easy is because, like, a few reasons, right? This data could be messy, it could be diverse. I can just imagine the kind of data that may be generated on a website, right? Very unstructured text and that kind of data. It can be very large. Right now, we are easily talking, most enterprises are dealing with petabytes of data, right? And because of all of these reasons, a new generation of systems have emerged. People call them distributed systems, right? The kind of systems that are started powering the likes of Google back then, and now powering all the AI, the open AI, the ChatGPT, right? So these new systems, nobody's familiar with these systems, which means if there's a problem, it was running fine last week. Today there's a problem. How do you debug or troubleshoot and understand what's going on? So that is becoming, and there is already a problem, but started becoming more and more of a problem as these systems and the data applications became what is called mission critical, right? They are powering real insights, they're powering real business. So the idea from the beginning was, it's not possible to leverage human expertise to solve these problems. Why? Because who has the expertise? These are new systems. You don't go to school and learn about these systems. They are new and the technology is evolving fast. So we need, and that was the germ of the idea, really in the first time I started getting the idea was while I was finishing my PhD, right? Human expertise won't scale. You need automated solutions. Even in my PhD, it was all about applying this AI and machine learning kind of techniques to manage these systems, new systems, right? So that idea started emerging. But taking an idea into something that is useful, usable by people, by the people who manage and who actually run these systems, that figuring that out, it was a big journey. And so the idea has never really changed. What has really changed is, what is the business around it? Right? How can that idea be converted into a product that is usable by millions of people, hundreds of thousands of enterprises? That's where most of the effort has actually gone.
So I'm thinking this was the inspiration for the name as well, Unravel Data, or is there an anecdote around it?
No, there is. Why the name Unravel, right? It's like, how do you unravel the mysteries of these complex systems and these data applications, right? So we want it to be a verb. Because just like you would say, Google it, or ChatGPT, right? It means something. So it's like, we want it to be a verb, unravel it, right? So answer these tough questions about data and operations, just based on using intelligence. So unravel, what's the name?
So I understand your area of specialization, or rather the area in which your company works, you all call it data observability. For a general audience, maybe you want to give us a simple description, explanation of what that means in practical terms?
Absolutely. So where the word observability comes from is, let's say we're trying to understand something, right? While we were getting into the call, we had challenges understanding this software for video conferencing, and something was going wrong, right? So a system that is observable means you can understand what the system is doing based on the outputs the system is generating. So that's an observable system. I can actually tell what is going on in the system, right? So observability can be applied to any system, any context. I want observability, meaning I want to understand what is happening in the system so that I can fix a problem if it is happening. I can actually make it, adapt it and make it work for my needs. That's an observable system. And connecting data with observability is, now there are all of these data systems, data platforms that are powering the modern applications like fraud detection or like, you know, ChatGPT, or in the medical field, when discovering like, you know, the medicine, it's all based on these data systems. So how do you make these data systems or data platforms observable so that they can themselves kind of tell you what is going on in the system? That's the data observability, right? But the magic in all of this is collecting data about these systems, applying AI on it to then answer exactly what system is doing, what is wrong with the system, why is the cost of system high. That's what data observability is. And that's what the entire area, in fact, the entire conference we are doing tomorrow is about, all the different aspects of data observability, which may be performance related. Right? It's not performing to my needs, it's just not working, right? So it's working, but the cost is too high, especially if it's running on the cloud. How do I control the cost and reduce it? So these are all the questions that people ask, for which data observability is a solution.
I mean, I want to ask down the line, and one thing that sort of, you know, I guess it's a kind of a common sense question more than it's not a technical question, in the sense that if you're able to tell your customers what's going wrong in some software that they're using, then are you also going to help them fix it? But before getting to that question, so I just want sort of maybe like a brief history of, you know, the whole concept of data observability. I mean, was there a scientist or an engineer who coined this term? How old is this concept? And of course, you've spoken about why large volumes of data have made this important today.
Absolutely. So observability itself, that word, comes from control theory.
Uh-huh.
Right? Where people deal with these electric systems, electronic systems, mechanical systems, right? So it has its roots in code, like in science and engineering. So the system is observable, what I described it as, that comes from control theory. But as people started working with more and more systems from computer science, right, it was a natural fit, like, hey, these systems, these software systems, these giant platforms that power the likes of Google and Microsoft and like an OpenAI, you want to make them observable. So the word was just natural, okay? And to capture what the need was. As I mentioned, observability can be connected. It's nothing to do with just the data systems. You want your car to be observable, right? And that's actually how, since you mentioned, like the entire self-driving cars have also come up. Because if you look at it, cars were initially like, you just have to tell what it's doing. Then nice dashboards start coming, which will show you the metrics of the car so you can understand what is going on. They got even smarter. They could tell you, look, the speed is actually reducing, your mileage is going down because the tire pressure is low. It's going and now telling you what is wrong, right? And from there, now we have self-driving cars, so you have to tell it, I want to go from, you know, Bangalore to Hyderabad, right? And it will drive it for you. So that's where it's actually now acting on your behalf. And that same evolution is coming to systems, where observability is the way in which like systems are easy to understand and easy to control and manage. But in fact, what we do at Unravel is really, that is the very start. And then we use all the AI algorithms, actually machine learning algorithms, to pinpoint and tell you what is wrong. Taking a very practical example, that in today's economy, right, everyone is very concerned about growing cloud cost and running my system on the cloud. It's costing me more and more money, right? And in this economy, money has become very precious. How do I understand whether the cost I'm spending is actually, like, you know, matching my usage, right? When hundreds, if not thousands of users are using my platform, when tens of thousands of applications are running daily on petabytes of data, just not an easy question to answer, where is my cost going? But the question doesn't stop there, right? What the CFO, the chief financial officer, wants to know is, not only why is cost high, how do I get it down? Where are all inefficiencies? Where can you optimize? But the real holy grail in Hari is, can that be made autonomic? Can that be made completely automated, where I can specify my budget for a month and the system acts on my behalf, it takes its insights, it applies it, it is aware of what my business needs of the business are and can make it happen. So that is observably how it's growing, and in fact, making things, like remediating things and taking actions, the right actions, is the major challenge that this industry is actually facing, and some of the things we are actually working on.
Would you say you're among the pioneers of this field in the sort of in the private industry sense, if not in the basic science research sense? Who are some of the top players in data observability platforms today?
So in data observability, there is first of all, it's a new area. And yes, we are one of the pioneering companies in the space, and because we have been doing research on this problem for a while. But there are, I would say, two kinds of players to enter. One is, of course, startups like us, who have understood that there's a need, right? And they're coming in from either costs are high, so how do we control costs? They may be coming with that business problem, right? Some of them may be coming because another problem is what is called data quality. Because like sometimes you're getting data which you can't really trust. Then if you build your application on top of that, how do you trust the result? So the data quality area is understanding when data is incorrect. So the results that you're computing from that is incorrect. Right? And sometimes it may be called data reliability. So startups may be coming from a cost angle or from a quality angle. Right? Our approach from the beginning has been, all of these are important problems. Quality can be important. It may be the biggest problem today, but that same enterprise may have a cost problem tomorrow. Or day after, they may have a performance problems where SLAs are not being met and you're paying penalties to the government because you're in health, you're not able to meet an SLA, like the time it takes to generate a result. Right? So it's basically startups may differ in how they are approaching the problem, and they are all working towards that common goal, like bring data observability to all these enterprises. The other players in this space are the more established companies, the companies which have been doing observability for a very large set of systems, like maybe observability for a data center, right, or observability for Oracle databases, right? They have been doing observability for other domains like web applications for a while. So they are looking at if the growth is happening in data and data systems, can we bring our technology to apply to them? So these are the two different players in this market. It's a very early market, but a market which we feel is going to grow and become extremely important, as you are pointing out, because data and data applications are the future of every business.
And what are some of the important ways in which you stand out or you differentiate yourself?
Well, I would say the primary way in which we like to think that we stand out, but the way in which we have approached the problem is from the get-go, we have been very clear that just taking all of this data and displaying it in graphs and in a UI is not enough. You have to apply algorithms and AI and machine learning to the data to convert that into insights. Because the fundamental problem is people who want to reduce cost or understand why their applications are not finishing on time, they just don't have the expertise to understand all the data. That is a fundamental problem, right? So to solve that problem, you have to generate insights in an automated fashion. So applying AI, like that was the very first even research paper we published on this way back in the day. That's what we have, I would like to think, has been our differentiating factor. Of course, more players will slowly start to apply those techniques. But we have the other key factors, because we have worked in the space for a while, a lot of learning comes from working with customers on real problems. And those learnings cannot be short-circuited. So the sheer fact of applying AI to generate insights in the observability space, as well as the years we have worked on this problem and all of the experience that we have gained, which is now converted into product, I would like to think the two main reasons we stand out.
Tell us about your main platform, and I got the sense that what you're developing is more along the lines of a platform. Do you have like a brand name for your platform? Can you also now want to return to my earlier question about whether having identified what is going wrong in terms of how data is going through the systems for your customers, are you also working? And you said that this is an important area of interest. Does your platform also do some amount of fixing what's wrong?
You asked a bunch of questions there, Hari. I would try to answer that one by one, but I can see the theme which where you're actually going, right? So the platform itself, yes, you're entirely right. You have to think of observability. There has to be a platform for observability because it has a diverse set of use cases, right? One use case doesn't cut it. But that said, what a lot of enterprises are looking for is, I want to see quick wins, nobody wants to spend 6 months implementing a platform. So we really have to straddle that boundary between the long-term solution that you can provide to an enterprise, right? While giving them a quick win so they can understand the value of the platform and then grow and bring more and more use cases to the platform. The problem that is of, and one way in which we do it is, what is the problem that is top of mind for a lot of data leaders? Today, the problem, by and large, that's top of mind is cost, understanding cost. How do I reduce cost given the macroeconomic conditions? That space is called FinOps, financial operations, right? So if there is one term in which that, the whole theme of my keynote tomorrow is data FinOps. How do you bring the best of breed of observability and data to solve FinOps problems? Bringing together the teams, which can be very disparate, right? The team that's worrying about cost in the CFO's org, and the team that's worrying about data in the CDO's org, the chief data officer's org, maybe the separate teams. How do you make it possible for them to work together, right? And in all of this, notice getting the first, getting value very quickly means you have to remediate problems for them. You have to automate actions for them. So that's how we have even the product. It is a platform, but it's a platform that is designed to bring very quick value. Some of the things we have learned by working with customers, while enabling them to bring and solve more and more use cases and bring more and more teams over time. So that's how the platform is designed, which also I'd like to think is a differentiator with respect to how the industry is performing, broadly today. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, yeah. I also wanted to know if there was a brand name for your platform.
Data FinOps, right?
Data FinOps. Okay. That's your flagship platform. Okay. While you mentioned FinOps, I'm thinking, my rudimentary understanding is it could be FinOps across verticals. But that said, are there specific sectors that are particularly relevant to your work?
So any sector that is deriving a lot of value from data, by running mission-critical applications on data, is a potential customer of ours. Mm. Right? Now, some verticals have gone faster into operationalizing data compared to others. For example, the financial industry has gone very fast because fraud, compliance, right, are very big problems in that vertical, and they cannot be solved with data. Right? So just the sheer nature of how different verticals have adopted data platforms, we have supported some of these verticals more than the others. But the applications of any company, that is any enterprise, sometimes it may be a small startup, not even anywhere in the Fortune 500 list, but that's doing a lot of great things with data. And hence, having problems with data, having the need for FinOps and data can be a potential customer of ours. So nothing to do with the vertical, but really to do with how is that vertical making use of data.
Give us some examples of your top customers.
Absolutely. So one of the customers which I really like to talk about is Maersk, the shipping and logistics company, right? And why is it so fascinating for me to talk about it? Any movie I have seen, I love action movies, right? I love Indian action movies, right? And in a lot of these movies, a fight sequence is shot on a shipping, in a dock. And you can see the Maersk container in the background, right? So I can show to my son, see, Maersk, they are a customer of ours. And why are they customer of ours? They have innovated significantly with data. Because logistics is a very, shipping and logistics. It's a very interesting business, right? With a very interesting perspective on margins and things like that. Maersk has really taken all the data it's collecting across every shipment, every container, what is stored in the container, the temperature of these containers, regulating that to avoid wastage. They have innovated significantly with data. But with that, bringing thousands, like literally 3,000, more than 3,000 users of data, right? More than 10,000 applications, naturally led to them having all of these challenges around the data and data ecosystem, right? High cost, like the reliability and understanding what these pipelines are doing. And they brought Unravel to solve this problem, and we were able to deliver a lot of success to them in a short period of time. So companies like in that, and we have a lot of companies in the banking domain, like almost any Swiss bank is a customer of ours, right? So again, that's another space. Retail, right, is another space, like the companies which are like in the US, like 7-Eleven, that's a customer of ours. So a lot of these companies are all innovating with data, are facing these similar technical challenges, and many of them are happy customers of ours.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in my mind, I was visualizing something which actually is not exactly a sort of correct metaphor, but it the thing is, when you said Maersk, it suddenly helped me visualize the kind of scale at which your work could be relevant. I mean, suddenly I was thinking about wide open oceans and, you know, shipping containers, millions of tonnage running around all over the world. And, you know, so I was just thinking about how if there are bottlenecks in such kinds of operations. And of course, like I said, it's not exactly the completely correct metaphor, but just something that was running in my mind.
In one way, it is interesting and apt metaphor. And the reason is, like, you connected the oceans, right? Like, the thing about oceans is so much like in water, right? But then getting, like, you know, the water to drink is the challenge, right? So that's the problem with this entire data space. There's so much data, extracting insights, right? And in our world, there's so much observability data, logs and metrics and traces, extracting insights from that. And that's a problem, which is a great fit for AI. So in that sense, it's probably an apt metaphor.
So I would imagine in the initial years, or at least several months, you would have worked on building your sort of, these days, what in startups parlance they call the minimum viable product and so on. When did you sort of get your first customer? And since then, give us a sense of today, you know, the kind of scale and size of operations, how many customers, which are your biggest markets, and so on.
Essentially, since a lot of research was happening on the problem, like that's, we did get an opportunity to really explore many ways, different ways to solve these problems and understand the problem. So that is what is happening in the early, like, days when we are doing research on this, right? And really, the company itself was formed in 2016 after we had a few customers. Our entire thought process was, we need customers and we want to show that this problem is not specific to if you are a customer in a particular vertical, or if you are a customer in a particular, like we are using the cloud or running the data center. So we went about, even before we raised the first round of funding, we went about getting customers with very diverse, like the kind of ways in which, or places they were, or ways in which they were using data. Because again, what is important to us was if they were using data in a mission critical fashion, then these problems are important for them to solve. Since then, we have grown, and again, in the public forum like this, I would not want to like disclose the number of customers and things like that. Sorry about that. But we have, since 2016, we have had, as you can imagine, right, the problem is becoming more and more important. So naturally, like with that, we have grown in the number of customers. Something that is public is and which is often a good way to even understand it, that the funding we have raised, now we are a Series D funded company. It's like, you know, just a couple of quarters back, we raised $15 million, which in this current climate is, as you can imagine, is a very significant, like, you know, achievement for us. And we are proud of that because we feel even in the toughest of current conditions, we have been able to raise money based on the strength of the customers we have. So enterprise is what we are after, and almost all the customers we have are household names, like Maersk.
The business model, is that like a pure play SaaS company? They subscribe to your technology?
That's right. So the way in which Unravel customers use it is based on subscriptions. It's in the new space that is the cloud, it's almost everything. People prefer a price based on consumption of the product. Like how much they are consuming, that is what they would actually want to pay for, and that's how the product is priced. Depending on whichever platform, there is a corresponding unit of consumption, and it's the product is priced, and which is fair for the customers as well, right? That's a way in which they can also grow with the product. Right? Now, we have big enterprise customers who sometimes are not comfortable with sending their data outside the cloud. Right? So we support both cloud, SaaS, a way in which the customer can use the product as well as they can deploy the product within their premises as well. For everyone, data is precious, and we just want to work with them wherever their data is.
In terms of a rough breakdown, would you say the SaaS model brings you most of your revenue, or because these are very large enterprise customers who want to have maybe a hybrid cloud kind of model, are they also very significant contributors to your revenue?
They are significant. That's where the rapid growth is happening. Now, because we started early, we have a very large number of big enterprise customers. Right? And but the big growth that we are seeing is in the SaaS and in the cloud. As almost every company is transforming itself to start using cloud. It may be public or it may be private cloud, but that's where by and large the growth is really happening in that space.
Can you give us a sense of your growth 1 year to the next over the last 2-3 years?
Well, again, I don't have the percentage numbers with me, but it's been very significant growth. And once again, I can point to in the current market, investors are looking for to invest in companies that have very high growth and that are very cash efficient. So we qualified from those two perspectives and as well as the potential for growth. So that's why the investment came in. But those numbers, I just don't have top of my head.
Normally, SaaS entrepreneurs would talk about how they've grown a certain X from 1 year to the next. So I was just wondering whether you want to say, what that X is in your case.
We are an extremely customer-obsessed company. And for us, really, yes, the numbers and the growth and those sort of things are important. But what really keeps me up at night is, are customers getting value from the product? Right? And I want to see them grow in their usage and adoption. Just that, today we had a lunch meeting with one of our big customers, right? DBS Bank in Singapore, and I was very happy to hear from them. They brought their entire team right here in Hyderabad. DBS has a major facility, and the kind of opportunities and the kind of ways in which they are using the product, plus all the ways in which they could be using the product. So it was a very interesting conversation. Those are the things we have, especially in the past many years, we have been extremely customer obsessed. So those are the metrics we look for. Customers, growth, adoption, net dollar retention.
So, in terms of your revenue, I know that you don't want to share numbers, but I'm just curious about whereabouts you might be in terms of your revenue, and if you're a profitable company or you're plowing back all your money into growth. Any comments on that?
So, a lot of the companies, especially last year or so, from the venture capitalists, they definitely want to see efficient growth. They are moving more and more companies to become profitable sooner. So there's definitely a shift in trend. Right? And that is what we are also moving towards. And in terms of growth, it's just the right phase of the company sometimes investing in growth. If something is really working, we'll be launching a major new product in 2 weeks time frame, right? At the Snowflake Summit. So that's a product we are very excited about. And based on all the things that we have seen, the indications in the last in a quarter or so, there is so much interest in the product. So if that goes based on the way we think it is, then we'll want to invest in growth for that product. And because it's a very large market to capture. So these decisions may actually change based on new product and product releases. But right now we are growing healthily. We are actually working more towards becoming more cash efficient, as well as going towards being profitable. So that's the way in which the company is evolving right now.
you have operations in Hyderabad, in India, any other cities, and also in the US. And in the US too, do you do software development, or is that more of a customer facing kind of operation?
We have been from the get-go a very globally distributed company. Right? Because, and the reasons for that is when we started originally, a lot of the people working in Unravel were working due to sheer passion. Once we raised our rounds of funding and we continued that tradition, so we have engineering in the US. We have engineering in three cities in India, Bangalore, Hyderabad, and Pune. And we have an engineering presence in Eastern Europe, in Slovakia as well. Okay. Mm. So in that sense, we are distributed. Sales and marketing of the entire go-to-market team is spread across, because we are into the American market, we are the European market, we are growing in the Asian market. So based on where the needs of customers are and where the growth are, we have sales teams across the world. The engineering runs in five places in the world. And to the question, yes, in the US we have engineering. We have leadership and engineering across in all these places.
Overall, how many people in your team today?
So we are north of 130. So that is the number of people, and we are rapidly, especially with the new round of funding, we are growing. In fact, just taking Hyderabad as an example, we were almost zero people in Hyderabad in early 2022. Now we are we established an office late last year, and then even the conference is being hosted because of all the interest that we have been getting. The second edition of our Data Ops conference is being hosted in Hyderabad, and we are planning to double team here, so in the other locations too. So we are in the phase where, of course, measured growth, but definitely growth.
Okay. And this conference, is that kind of evolving into your annual flagship conference?
Yes. So we do have an annual flagship conference that is hosted in the US. Now, given that during the pandemic, we had to go online. Right? And then we wanted to start more local, regional versions of it. But one of the things we wanted to be very clear from the get-go is when we do these regional events, it's not about Unravel. It's really about the entire area raising awareness of this new area and the kind of challenges, as well as just enabling people to have very open discussion about these problems. And by the way, they learn about the Unravel product, that's great for us. So these regional versions are not about Unravel. It's really about the problem. So, and that is, especially with that, we didn't want to go online. We actually wanted to have, even if it's a small number of people, really good discussions. We started the first version in Bangalore in, late last year. And we wanted just a small set of people, but the response was just so overwhelming, because everyone wants to talk about these problems because they don't have any other venue to talk about the operational kind of challenges around data. Right, the FinOps kind of challenges, right? With a very, interactive, collaborative kind of setting. So for the second version, we picked Hyderabad. We have a presence here, so it's easy. But the interest that we got in the first version started coming from many other cities in India. Right here, when we're hosting Hyderabad, we're getting a lot of interest to host the next version in Delhi. We'll see how that goes, we'll see how that goes. It's been a very interesting experience, interacting with the community. And both learning from them, as well as giving back.
Just today, earlier in a different context, I was having a small discussion about how the earlier generations of SaaS companies started out with SMB customers and then eventually graduated towards selling to larger enterprises. Whereas there's this whole generation of companies now like yours, where from the get-go, you're serving some of the biggest companies in the world. I mean, to your mind, what are all the different factors that are coming together that's, making this happen for you? Also, in India, what do you see about the ecosystem that excites you in terms of engineering? Of course, two separate different questions. We just want to know your thoughts on them.
I'll take the second one first, right? From a ecosystem perspective, we started off in Bangalore. That's where we were headquartered for a long time. And especially during the pandemic, we did see that a lot of unravelers had to move, had to go work from the cities So then we started looking more broadly. That's one of the reasons why we even started looking at like, more like cities. But quickly we realized that like cities like Pune and Hyderabad have very good talent, like people who are passionate about data, passionate about solving problems around data. And there are various reasons, like you know, the history of the cities, why that kind of ecosystem emerged, right? Pune had some of the companies that were working and doing excellent work in database systems, right? Hyderabad, again, my first visit, I've been telling the story a few times, in 1999, from IIT, I came to Hyderabad because there was a seminar that was being hosted by the IIIT, which was just very young, like just 2-3 like years in, right? I remember like thinking, hey, this is like a desert, like what is here, right? And then when we came, like you know, I personally, like we came last year, I was just amazed by the growth, right? The tech growth, the amount of facilities and ecosystem, the talent and the passion of the engineers, be it in science or be it in like engineering here. So that's when we decided to build an office here, right? So that we could like get from that community as well as now is our time to give back to these conferences. Okay, so the ecosystem in many of these cities in India just is spectacular. And it needs a little bit of time investing in that. Right? We can't just assume that, hey, I'll set up an office and then I'm just going to reap all the benefits. What do you have to give? It will take your time, help, but the kind of challenge and again, the opportunities in these cities is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And now coming to your first question, which is as I mentioned, for us, for every company, they have to figure out their own destiny, right? For us, our destiny was about identifying these companies that are doing great things with data, right? Making data application mission critical, because they have the problems we can solve. And it just so happened that a lot of these enterprises, let's say in finance or in retail, got into the act first. Right? And they were looking for solutions because for them it's not very good versus buy. It's like, I want to solve this problem. And I just can't hire enough people to solve these problems fast enough. So I have to get products. Sometimes when you go into more like the startups or SMEs, either they don't have the pain as much. Or sometimes they would think that, hey, let me devote one engineer to solve the problem. That is enough problem for now. Instead of like buying a new product. So just like we, for us, enterprise was our calling from the get-go. And we've stayed laser focused on that.
Are there pieces of experience or exposure that you feel is still missing in the ecosystem in India, which you fulfill out of Europe or US or Eastern Europe, wherever?
Not really in terms of expertise, but sometimes it's like, you know, the reason we are hosting this conference, right? It's like I feel like sometimes there are people and reaching the people who are passionate about solving these hard problems, that can be a challenge. Right? So you need venues like the conference for us. The conference helps us identify people who are passionate about this problem, who tomorrow could be an Android engineer. So I would say that is what we have seen as a challenge. It's not like the ecosystem is not there, it's not like the people are not there. But somehow during COVID, things changed in such a way that getting and forming that community of common-minded people has become harder. Maybe it's there online, but maybe it's not that easy to get too scattered. Organizing events like this, you get through like in the passion discussions going, and that can translate into it for us, like maybe even recruitment.
And in your own personal case, while you said you always had this idea that you wanted to turn it into a product and a platform and a commercial business, actually making the transition from a computer scientist and an adjunct professor to CTO of a profit-making company, were there areas where you had to quickly bring yourself up to speed, or were there areas that you had to unlearn?
Interesting question. Actually, I've always felt that just having two hats, right? One hat as of an academic and other hat as of a CTO has helped me. It helped me, like, you know, grow both my personas as well. The way it has helped me is sometimes, like, you know, when having a conversation, sometimes having my academic hat on is more beneficial because then the person on the other side sees me not as somebody who's come something to sell, right? So they're genuinely interested in understanding their problems and solving it. But sometimes the other, like, you know, if I don't have my CTO hat on, if I don't have my product hat on, then people say, why am I talking to this person? Because he can't solve my problem. He's just an academic, right? So being able to have both hats on and translation by understanding what conversation I'm in has helped me and helped me refine both of these. So now when I talk with my students, I can tell them about real problems, like how the work they're doing can have real impact. But when I'm actually having a discussion with my colleagues, sometimes just like, you know, let's take at least a moment to think about a longer term picture rather than getting just like, you know, laser focused on solving just the problem of today, right? As I was mentioning earlier, like a lot of the research we did, when we learned that technology is evolving fast, that means a new approach to the problem. How do you solve the problem where technology itself can be evolving, right? So it's helped. But of course, I don't think there is any unlearning, it's just adapting to the situation.
Are you a first-time entrepreneur? And are you one of the first sort of first entrepreneurs in your family as well?
I am definitely a first-time entrepreneur. And I think in my family is most of my father's generation, my mother's generation, they're all government servants. Like my father actually was in income tax, and today actually he has a very enviable position of being the secretary to the royal family of Travancore.
Have you thought about, I mean, you mentioned being in Stanford, and that's sort of where the entrepreneurial bug bit you. And I would imagine working in a field that you're passionate about and that you've already spent many, many years researching as well must have helped. But I mean, I guess in a sort of a philosophical sense, do you have a preference in terms of being a startup founder, entrepreneur versus being an academic?
I love working on new challenges. And in both cases, being when I was an academic as well as when now I'm in industry, that's the one thing I kind of look for. Right? What is some interesting, important, like, challenge to solve? And that goes back to the one, like, a reason of existence, right? Which is, I want to solve some really important problem that can make a difference in society. So I look for that. But apart from that, as I mentioned, it's like, just have to learn how to adapt to the situation and do the best for people who are trusting you. And just coming with one fixed mindset may not be the right solution. Now, there's no one size that fits all. That's been my philosophy. Just do your best, work on important problems, right? And don't, like, you know, fear failure.
Yeah, just to extend that thought process a little bit, and from each phase of your career as a computer science researcher as well as a startup entrepreneur, to your mind, what might be the top 2-3 lessons? You just mentioned how don't worry about failure. And I guess in the Indian context, even today, after everything that has happened from Flipkart onwards, we still do find instances of, you know, entrepreneurs who don't want to talk about failure. So yeah, just to extend the thought process, what might be some of the biggest takeaways from each phase of your career?
Yeah, so I was fortunate to be, I've been in a world where I could say, like, you know, don't fear failure, because I was an academic. My job was to work on really hard problems, right? Get government funding to kind of work on those problems, and that helped. So I was fortunate, right? Because if I have taken industry funding to do that, I can't, like, that's not what that funding is for. So it just so happened in my case that I was able to work on the hard problems, learn, and then build the company such that it can give back to the entire society. Right? If there's one thing I've learned is that I've had failures at many points in my life. Right? It's not like everything has come like smooth and easy from even getting into the IITs. Right? Nothing was easy. So my advice would be, like, you know, if you're truly passionate about something, first of all, the advice I give to my students is, like, you know, just as an example, if you're trying to do a PhD and you are not passionate about it, don't do it. Because everybody is out to, like, you know, reject your research papers and things like that. Not because they are like in a band, but they want you to be really good. You want to do the best work. So if you are truly passionate, then you can do the best work of your life. So believe in that passion and then keep like working hard. So that's the one thing like I try to follow.
Okay, very nice. Really good conversation. I suppose I could keep going on, but hopefully we'll get a chance to continue the conversation. And all the best for your new product launch as well. I look forward to learning more about that. Thank you again for making time for me very generously. Definitely hope to keep the conversation going.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate you, man. And it's been a pleasure with you. Love to meet you in person sometime.
That's it for this conversation. I'll be back with another episode of the Startup Fridays soon. Until then, have a great Friday and a wonderful weekend. I'm Hari Arakli. Thank you for listening.